Welcome to the Intimate Marriage Podcast, where I teach educated, successful couples how to have incredible, passionate relationships so that you can stop compromising and start feeling fully alive in your relationship. I'm Alexandra Stockwell, aka the Intimacy Doctor. I'm a physician, a relationship and intimacy coach, and I'm an intimate marriage expert. My husband and I have been married for 26 years. We have 4 children and full professional lives, and we've created an amazing marriage. I've shown hundreds of couples how to do so as well. So if you want to deepen your understanding of your own relationship and learn to access new heights of emotional, sensual, and erotic intimacy, you're in the right place. I will show you how. Now, let's dive in. It is my pleasure in this conversation to introduce you to Elsbeth Muth and Freddie Zentel Weaver. If you're here with video, you see what elegant people they are who immediately are magnetic and attract interest. And they have assisted thousands of couples and singles to create lasting intimacy and fulfillment, having been featured on Showtime series Sexual Healing and the Emmy Award-winning NBC show Starting Over. They are the best-selling authors of Sexual Enlightenment, endorsed by Michael Beckwith, and are the co-founders of the Tantra Nova Institute in Chicago. They have coached people from all kinds of backgrounds, including billionaires, innovators, and power couples all over the world. I have been on summits with Freddie and Elsbeth before and just so deeply appreciated their honesty, expansiveness, and generosity in their enlightenment. And so I am very glad to be having this conversation. A warm welcome to both of you.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What would you like people to know that I haven't said yet?
Oh, you know, our journey coming to Tantra, coming to what we are doing now, is so fundamentally different. And perhaps we want to, you know, start out with where Freddie has come from, where I have come from, and then how our paths merged to, you know, what we are doing now at Tantra Nova, bringing love and intimacy and pleasure and bliss to the world.
Wonderful. Would you go ahead and share a bit of the journey before it blended?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you again for having us today. This evening. So my name is Freddie Zentel Weaver, and this is my partner and beloved Dr. Elsbeth Muth. We're founders, directors, Tantra Nova Institute. I was first introduced to the curriculum, a large part of the curriculum that we teach now, when I was 13 years old. I was living in Hawaii at 13, going through my puberty, spending a lot of time in the shower, which a lot of guys are. My father at the time was a practicing psychiatrist. And thank God I had him in my life. He was very kind and very perceptive and gave me a book to read on how to integrate sex and meditation. So I took that on. I loved it. My girlfriend loved it. And at the time, going into high school as a freshman, I had this dream idea to go to college on an athletic scholarship. But there was a part of me that didn't believe I had the skills or the capacity to do that. The practices, in addition to being fun, really assisted me in shifting that belief at a very deep level. Of course, I did all the physical work that you do to be able to do that and go to college on athletic scholarship. And well, I did. After college, I kept reading and doing books in these practices and applying these principles in my personal relationships. I was in the software business for a long time in San Francisco. Matter of fact, I grew up on a houseboat in Sausalito as a kid, just a quick note to the doctor here. But knowing what I knew about, you know, my own aliveness, that was missing after 15 years in the software business in San Francisco. So I was looking for a way to reinvigorate my experience in my life. There was an opportunity that had opened up in Chicago. So they interviewed me, hired me, moved me to Chicago. That was 22 years ago. I was still in the software business, but I was single. So I was online looking for Shakti, a female tantra partner, and Elspeth's profile showed up. We met, and that was 22 years ago, and it was like kismet. 6 months to the day we met, we transcended the romantic drama, and we created Tantra Nova. And Tantra Nova has been such a fulfillment for myself personally and for us collectively in teaching these practices of sexual enlightenment as a way to get to the stuff that we most deeply desire. And we all have an idea of things that have eluded us in our life, and we want to share with you some of the fundamentals of these practices today.
What a magnificent journey. Before we hear from you, Elspeth, I wonder, Freddie, if you would actually just define Tantra. Many listeners of mine are extremely educated about many things, but wouldn't necessarily know exactly what you mean when you say Tantra. And the other related question is, when you say that you did these practices, would you give us a flavor of what kind of a practice you would have been doing when you were 13 or in high school or any other time along the way?
Sure.
Wow, you are delving right in.
That's great. I love it. That's what's always pulling my coat, like keeping me from getting right to the meat of this.
I mean, I guess everything in your journey is so interesting, but that in particular has my attention.
Well, good, because it's something that brought us all into this experience of life in terms of sex. So the practice that I was introduced to through the reading and what my father had shared with me some of the information was sexual meditation. And the sexual meditation is unique in that meditation is great because it develops our witness, our observer state of looking at ourselves and our whole clay that we are. The sexual meditation is like a turbocharge of that, because when we bring the meditative practice to the sexual activation or that altered state, we actually get in that intimate altered state of what happens in the sexual, more open, loving, vulnerable, receptive, chemically, more endorphin, serotonin, oxytocin. So we're in a chemical state of ease. We're more open, loving, you know, emotionally shifted. Now with the practices in the meditation experience where we are witnessing, we are with intention of something we want to dedicate the practice to. And now I'm able to get to some of the frequency, some of the emotional baggage, some of the story, some of the energetic stuff that might keep me from allowing in to create, to see, to believe, whatever this intention is. That for me, that was basketball at the time, but it could be anything. Coming from that, we are creating our lives, though often it appears that we are subjected to our lives. And so in this practice, it was really an opportunity to get more deeply connected to getting out of my own way, if you will, to bring in what I most deeply desired, which at the time was play basketball on athletic scholarship. So what Tantra is it's one of the original yogas of the energetic body, different from Hatha yoga, which is a physical body, which we know. And coming from that it's all energy, it's one of the most effective yogas in terms of shifting something in our life. One of the things that makes Tantra unique from other yogic or meditative practices is you're working with your life force or sexual energy. In all the variations of Tantra that there are, and there are many, we're Tantra Nova, Tantra New. So we're integrating practices from the East in terms of the Tantra practice of working with sexual energy, breath awareness, energy, and intention. And some of the practices from the West, where we are working with shifting something from the intellectual, say, from the language, how we create our reality in language, creative self-discovery, how we discover ourselves in the creative process of music, movement, and art. And we're integrating that into the tantric practices. All the variations that there are, when the primary edicts of Tantra is to, for the man, to learn to separate ejaculation from orgasm, and for the woman to learn to dance in her own sexual aliveness. Because on both sides of those paradigms, there is, for the man, the unconsciousness around the sexual self, where we, from the beginning, it's like the guy with the little boy with the little erection, look, ma, no hands. And as adults, men are run by the little head their whole lives. So This is learning to separate ejaculation does many things. Emotionally starts, it allows us to get in touch with how this energy has us in terms of falling in love or possessiveness or jealousy, or is it too big, too small, too hard, too soft? All of that, it's loaded. Shame and fear and guilt and all that stuff. For the woman, she gets often in touch with, in general, this oppression of the aliveness of the woman's sexual energy. And so those are some of the just touching on this work. But we have had great success with all levels of people who are familiar and unfamiliar with this work in terms of them getting to what they most deeply want to create in their life.
Okay, so I'm sure oversimplify, but it sounds to me like one of the things that you're saying is that in a very holistic way, including sexual energy, mindfulness, desire, intention, you're integrating. It sounds like very much an integrating practice, which then allows more to happen. Is that something you would say yes to?
Yeah.
I would say also, in addition to that, I would say that when you bring consciousness to the sexual, what starts to show up for anyone who applies some of the distinctions that we are teaching, which is a breath awareness, energy awareness, and intention, one gets more unmasked. So we're kind of led to this intimate vulnerability that we often, in this Machiavellian world, we often hide from, you know, in our own self. And emotionally, some of the stuff is so powerful that keeps us stuck in places.
Okay, amazing. Maybe, Elspeth, you'll share your journey and we can add that.
Yes, Alexandra. You know, I would have loved a dad like Freddy's. I mean, did you have a dad who gave you a book on sex consciousness? I mean, I didn't. It was just the opposite. As you can tell from my accent, I grew up in Germany and came to the United States in my late 20s to do about postgraduate work in music. And then after a few years, I got my doctorate in education, and then I moved into management consulting. And while I was, you know, from early on, I was always sexually quite curious, to the chagrin of my parents. And while I'm one of 10 children, and it was just like much more constricted in my home compared with Freddie's home. And I remember when I came back from a ballroom dance, I was there with my first boyfriend, and I came home, you know, had makeup on and, you know, lots of eyeliner. And I went into the kitchen. My dad was sitting at the kitchen table, and he said to me, "You look like a whore." And so there was a kind of suppression, or like, you know, that I grew up with. So no matter what, I stayed with it because it's part of my path, my personal expression, including this sexual aliveness. However, what opened up for me out of being introduced to Tantra, first in my early 30s through books, however, I had not taken on the practice as a discipline until I hit 50. And at that point, I felt quite despaired about relationship because I was, I had this pattern of attracting unavailable men. And while that was exciting, most of the time I was alone. And when I look back onto my life, it's like, it was like being with the same men over and over again, although the men shifted. I mean, there were not that many, but, you know, two or three is enough. And so that was just like something that hit me, that if I wasn't going to change that pattern, I would end up without lasting intimacy and love in my life before I leave this planet. And I didn't want that. So I said, whatever you need to do, went off to a 10-day meditation retreat in the south of France. Then a few months later, my first Tantra workshop. and delve deeply into the practice of meditation and Tantra. And in the process, what opened up was that I discovered that I had held distrust towards men. And that, you know, came from an early teenage experience, first intercourse, which was very painful with this first boyfriend that I was deeply in love with. I had agreed to it, but I was not ready. Anyway, it was freakingly painful. I had to go to the gynecologist. The gynecologist sent the bill to my house. My father opened it, all hell broke loose. You can imagine, given the situation at home. The boyfriend left, you know, a few weeks later, and there I was totally alone and no soul to turn to. And that was the moment when I made a decision, which I discovered in my deep dive of exploring what kept me from having lasting intimacy and love in my life, was that I lived with it, the interpretation of men never being there for me when I need them. And while that, as a teenager, there was, you know, some truth to that. But then that was like stretched out into my young adulthood, my adulthood and so forth, none examined until, you know, these tantric experiences that really opened me up. Not, you know, I had an therapy around that stuff and thought it was resolved. But the thing is that talk therapy accesses the conscious mind. I cannot talk with my without my conscious mind. And these experiences, these memories, they actually live more on the cellular level. So we could call it in the subconscious, and that's not accessible through the conscious mind. So the tantric practice is also a beautiful way of tapping into our physical, sexual, emotional, mental, and consciousness or spiritual being. And also, again, back to your earlier question, the reintegration of self. Because that often gets compartmentalized. Like my experience with the intercourse, there was a shutting down or closing off or protecting. But that also then separated my sexual center from my love center. So I was then, you know, a little bit confused and was looking for love through sex, which is actually not attainable. Now, when the sexual center and the love center are in harmony, when they communicate with each other, when one is not stronger or out of balance, then it can be a dance, because they can beautifully inspire each other, support each other, you know, also, okay, slow down a little bit, you know, or emphasize and fuel. So a big part of the tantric practice is to come back to our integrated self. And in the process, of course, we get to discover what disintegrated us in the first place, move through that, clear that, heal that, so that we come into harmony within ourselves, out of which we can be in greater harmony with another.
I do want to respond to one thing, the way you opened so elegantly, Elspeth, in asking how my father was. I'm actually not going to talk about that, but having heard your father, Freddie, and your father, Elspeth, I want to say that one aspect of my mission with this podcast and all of the work that I do is to create more fathers and mothers who have enough integration and expansion in themselves and do the work to shed the shame and learn how to be truly present and experience ever more pleasure in a sexual context. I want that for you who are listening, and also so that your children get to have parents who are that way. And in that way, the legacy takes on completely different flavors, and we get to have other challenges we navigate, but not the kinds that you've just described and so magnificently navigated, Elspeth. I'd like to pivot a little bit because the two of you speak so well. It just there's a lot of erotic energy in what you both describe and in imagining how this works in one's body and with one's partner's body. And I'd like to pivot into the more practical everyday interactions. I heard you in another interview say how when you wrote your amazing book, Sexual Enlightenment, that Elsbeth, you are organized, systematic, structured, disciplined in that sense. And Freddie is creative and free-flowing and more spontaneous and a very important contributor to the brainstorming. And I think whether we're talking in the sexual realm or maybe for a moment in order to be more specific and clear, we're talking about a project together or deciding systems in a household for getting the bills paid on time. How do the two of you bring your wealth of tantra depth to navigate the practical moments like figuring out directions to some place where one of you wants to know how many miles till the next turn, and then after that left, it's this many miles, and the other one says, well, I think we'll find our way.
I'm usually the guy when it comes to navigation. But the rest of it, I just might say a couple things, and then I take a motorcycle ride and let Elsbeth do it. She's good at it. And so we navigate that pretty well. When we wrote our book, we actually found that our writing was much more, it was more academic. It wasn't as flowing and story-like. So we hired a writer to take what we came up with to make it a little more palatable to the reader. And so I would give my notes to Elsbeth and Elsbeth would work on them. And then we would give them to this writer and then she would come back and then we would refine what she wrote and kind of clarify things. And that's kind of how we did it. That's how the process went.
Yeah. And, also audio recording. The thing is that, yes, just as you pointed out, Alexandra, that I'm in the realm of getting something done around like a book or even, workshops, setting them up. And I'm the more linear one. And Freddie is, it's curious because usually the linear is more the masculine.
I don't actually find that in the most successful couples. I don't mean their relationship is successful, but in my couples with two attorneys, two subspecialty surgeons, where they're both go-getters, I find it much more what you described to be your situation.
I think, one of the things for the man and the new man is the tantra man, the man who's integrated the masculine, feminine, yin-yang balance, who can be grounded in his masculine, but not afraid of the feminine aspects of emotion and social listening and giving and allowing the other to be fully who they are and being in their strength. So that's a smart way. So I would imagine the smart guys that you have known and worked with have gotten that message,
So I want to bring an example from our teaching because we teach together at least, every other month. 3-day workshops. I mean, for a long time, a whole weekend for 3 days, we sit there in one room in front of a group. And so again, there we have very different approaches. I'm much more, again, the focused one and going deep and bringing something forth. And at times it's curious that while I may work with someone or with a couple and get to something deeper, which sometimes may be a little painful or irritating or what may come up for the couple, for the people, And then Freddie has a way of bringing in humor or an example that takes it out of the density of the moment into a little bit like a bird's eye view. you know, and there may be even some laughter then.
I tell a joke, I tell a story, I sing a song around the same subject that they're working on. And that's where the, you know, a lot of the insights come from, the creative process. You know, we can lighten up and get something in a different way, see something, feel something, you know, observe something.
Let me say something.
Please.
And so in that sense, it's really we complement each other beautifully. And then, of course, there are also the moments when I think, why is he stepping into my flow here right now? Into, you know, I see it going there and he who is over here. You know, just my Germanic way of thinking is like, what did just happen? And then I had to train myself to really stay calm, because those are the moments when I can get easily, you know, triggered and then get pissed. And what did he just do? And who does he think he is? You know,
and so, you set it up so beautifully.
Yes, exactly. We dovetail. So we hit it with the left and the right brain. So they're getting it. I created a show several years ago called Sexual Enlightenment. I wrote this show as a one-hour, one-person show, and I toured it all over the world with large audiences, small audiences, and there were 5 songs in it. It was all about demystifying sex, love, and intimacy. So it was my expression of what we teach in our classes and workshops and what we talk about in our book, and it was just another way to put it out there, because it can't be said enough. I said, when we started this work, I said, Doc, I said, well, you know, this is really about creating peace on Earth. And Elspeth says, what are you talking about? I'm like, it's because, you know, she's like, don't say that, because people are coming here, they want better orgasms, you know. But really, if you could teach these practices, we could teach these practices to nuns or to priests if they were vowed to celibacy, because it's about being what this energy leads us to. That's the intelligence, this inner listening, this seeing ourselves in each other, this being connected with our breath, being grounded in that joy and that creative process of that foundation of life, which is that sexual energy. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't look sexual when you're being that energy. You know, you notice people after they fall in love and had sex and they come to work and they're glowing and they're happy and they're light. That's the energy. And you don't have to have sex necessarily when you tap in consciously.
Yes, I actually am so grateful for how each of you have responded to this question, because the question underneath my question is, I'm sure you're familiar with this phrase in personal growth. It's one of my favorites. How you do anything is how you do everything. And very often a couple feels like they have a very good, solid, strong marriage. They're collaborative. They make decisions well. They support one another. And then in the bedroom, things are flatter and less collaborative. And it's hard to know how to take what seems to be such a good, strong relationship and have that reflected sexually. And I think more often in a earlier relationship or even not a relationship, there can be incredible fireworks and chemistry in the bedroom or wherever it happens to be occurring, and communication, collaboration, basic decision-making together is much more challenging. And so I think of in a long-lasting relationship, one of the beautiful things is to have what's available in everyday life and what's available in explicitly erotic interactions align with one another. I presume that's one element of sexual enlightenment, although maybe I could start by asking you to define it. And I'd also love to hear each of you respond to how what's happening in a sexual experience does or doesn't reflect what's happening in the rest of the relationship.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, one of the things that happens in these practices is the practice of the sexual rituals that we teach. There is a construct of giver and receiver roles, which allows the receiver to be in their sexual energy aligned with intention in however it might show up in this intimate vulnerability. If they have an intention to be more open and loving, they might get in touch with the sadness of having missed that their whole life, or something that happened to them in their lives, And there may be an energetic release of tears and something that they hadn't gotten to in what happens in this intimate vulnerability of the sexual activation of the emotions, endorphins, and so on, and being seen in this way. So in a relationship, and how this can flow over is, and really the one of the big messages and one of the big takeaways is, how does creativity and pleasure show up for you? And it may not be sexual at all. I mean, it, once you tap in, it may, in a relationship, how can we keep moving towards that in how we're living our lives and being with each other?
Yeah, so for us, the bedroom and the kitchen are not, they are pretty close together. And that doesn't mean you have to have sex on the kitchen counter. The thing is that intimacy doesn't start right before we have sex. Intimacy is a state of being. It's not like, oh, sometimes we are intimate and sometimes we are not. No, it's a ever-present state of feeling and being. And there are moments when we may perhaps a little bit more separated. Let's say I did something and Freddie gets angry with me. I did something he doesn't want, or I didn't fulfill a promise. You know, there are these moments of, oops. And one of our practices is, and it starts with one, with self-practice, is to not tolerate these moments to linger. Because every moment we live in anger or resistance is a moment of missed intimate connection. And that doesn't mean that there may not be certain things where we want to talk about and clarify or set new agreements. However, that we drop back into, like, you know, equanimity within. And that's a daily practice. And then have partner practices throughout the day, from the tantric hug, heart-to-heart connection, placing, you know, a hand on the beloved's heart and breathing with each other. They cannot really see it here, you know. So we have, for example, this practice of, you know, Freddie may sit at his desk and I want to connect with him. He's not on the phone. He's not in a Zoom meeting or so, you know. And I may just come over and hold him for a moment, placing one hand on the front and the other one on the back, the heart center. And then when one of us comes to the other like that, we pause. It's by agreement. It only works by agreement. Otherwise, I could be an imposition to him, you know? And then we breathe together, breathing in together and breathing out together. And breathing in together and breathing out together. And these two or three breaths, they recalibrate the connection. And then he keeps doing what he does and I go off and do something else. But these moments of connecting on an energetic, physical basis, they are so, it goes for a long, you know, while.
Now, for many couples, you know, the sexual piece is the only time perhaps that they're really just completely without story or disconnect or any kind of problem for a few, in that orgasmic moment or in the just the whole act of intercourse. And so if you could bring consciousness to that practice, so when you learn the practices as we teach them as a ritual, they will overflow into your mutual lovemaking. If it's anywhere, it's everywhere, as you said earlier. And so that will enhance the mutual lovemaking they do, whatever self-love stuff they do, and you'll also be able to use this as a meditation practice. We had the sweetest connection the other day. Elspeth, I was laying down and Elspeth came and just laid on top of me and we fell asleep. And it was just so nice, you know, our hearts kind of started synchronizing and it was as good as almost any kind of sex you would have. It was that kind of pleasurable, ethereal kind of, you know, euphoria.
And an essential piece of that was that we synchronized our breath. And then after a while, we were not conscious about it anymore, but then we were in sync. And experiencing intimacy can take on, you know, different dimensions. And I think what you alluded to having sex, I think this is what's so seductive about sex, is that there are moments of where we are just present, where the mind slows down, we cannot have a climax or an ejaculation with the mind chatter going. It's not possible. It's so seductive for a few seconds just to be in the ether of that orgasmic, you know, coming and going. And so the thing is that biologically, physiologically, we are being led there through, you know, the...
That's the intelligence of the sexual.
Through the intercourse or the sexual activity. But sometimes it may also just, because that's the only place where we can be there. How would it be if that was an everyday practice of like anywhere, everywhere in my life, connecting, and then further that bringing to the sexual, you know, having sex experience and deepen that. So this is where this, you know, sexual enlightenment comes in, where we bring the sexual dimension with the enlightened dimension, the spiritual dimension together. And we are both. We are this human being, this earthly being, and then we are also the spiritual heavenly being simultaneously. And we as humans are equipped with this phenomenal body that can have such wonderful feelings, sensations, pleasure. I mean, bliss, you know. If we were not meant to feel pleasure, we would not have all these nerve endings. So this is a beautiful gift. And of course, we can lose ourselves in it and get addicted to it, just like to anything pleasurable. Or we can connect with our higher self and then have that higher self be imbued by that wonderful life force energy. Just the other way around, as we can use the consciousness energy to affect, to impact our sexual self. And that only can happen, you know, with consciousness, because it's like the primal part and the mental or mind part. So we want to train ourselves in that and, of course, deepen our experience solo and with each other.
When we think of, like, you know, peace on earth is just a thought away, and that we're really understanding how powerful our thoughts are in terms of dreaming this world that we're in. I can't imagine it without us having some kind of okayness around where the sexual leads us, not necessarily the physical act of the sex. Because right now we're just in the physical aspect. It's like, you know, before we had, you know, computers, we had telephones. Before that, we had, you know, typewriters. Before that, we had, you know, writing. And before that, we had hieroglyphs, you know, and so on. So we're not in the phase yet consciously where we get that we can have peace on earth, you know, as a thought. So this sexual peace and pornography is all part of the process. People are just gorging themselves with just the immediate gratification of the sexual. And there was a guru that I used to follow, and he was one of the first gurus to integrate the Eastern approaches of transformation in the West. He would, when the adepts would come to study with him, he would say, he would throw them in a room and then let them have as much sex as they want. Then after a week or so, and they're all worn out, he would come in and he'd say, "Now we meditate." He would let them do what... He would go, let them go through what they thought was going to be the Mecca, was going to be the thing, was going to be the end all to be all. And then after they were worn out and still in their head about stuff, he would come in and say, "Now we learn something deeper and how to stay in that place."
That is so beautiful. And I'd actually like to ask, you know, I believe so deeply that long-term relationships are the ultimate vehicle for personal growth. And so I ask this question to all of my guests. Maybe I'll start with you, Freddie. What have you learned about yourself as a result of being married to Elsbeth?
Oh, my God. I'm fine by myself in the forest, okay? What I've learned with Elsbeth is my triggers are my triggers. And if we can come from that owning our own upsets, owning my own upset, I can now get out of my own way to either make a request or have no request or see something about what that trigger was about that I otherwise wouldn't have seen. So learning something about myself is one. The second piece is learning to allow her to be totally who she is, without my ego, without my expectation, without my view of who I think she should be. And so those two things have assisted me. And when my life is over, I'll be like, man, what a ride. It won't be like, oh my God, I wish I could have. I only have da-da-da-da-da. So yeah, relationship is the ultimate transformational, you know, opportunity for us to keep growing and being full in our lives and being fulfilled. And, you know, when the time to transition comes, it'll just be part of the process, which it is anyway, but without the struggle.
Okay, magnificent. What about you, Elsbeth? What have you learned about yourself as a result of being married to Freddie?
Very similar to what Freddie shared, to really always come back to myself. When I get angry, when something doesn't look the way I want it to look, when it feels like Freddie is doing something to me, to actually turn back to myself and look at, Elsbeth, what's there that this is so triggering or that you are so upset, you know, and go into the inner exploration. Sometimes it's just shifting in the moment to get off it, to let go, you know, that, wait a minute, that's not what I'm committed to. I'm not committed to anger and being angry with Freddie. I'm committed to harmony, to flow, to express our joy with each other. And if it's my emotional state and frequency is not in line with that, then the only one I can change is myself. And the more I do this, the shorter our tense moments have become, and they have become less and less and less. And sometimes also, you know, we have the permission with each other to remind ourselves if one of us really stays on it and in it. So, you know, Freddie may say, okay, are you ready to let it go? Or, you know, are you done? And, you know, most of the time that really works well because I gave him permission to remind me and remind me of myself to recalibrate. So, and now I'm actually in a place where whenever something shows up, I turn more to the question, which is, Elsbeth, what may you be able to see here? What may be to be seen here that I couldn't see before? So then opening myself up to there may be something that is just eludes me. And in this openness, answers may come that I couldn't expect. Ways of looking into the world may open up. That alters how I go about business, how I go about Freddie, how I go about, you know, whatever I do in my life.
It's just so beautiful to hear the two of you speak. And in particular, I'm just touched by what you've created for yourself, each of you, what you've created together, and also what you then make possible for so many other people. Would you like to say something about how people can find you and what they might look for? In other words, I'll have your links in the show notes, but what would you like to say?
Yes, so how they can find us is through our website, tantranova.com, TANTRANOVA.com, tantranova like supernova. And there is lots of, you know, there, or YouTube. I mean, when you are right on our website, you can go all to these resources. Of course, also on the homepage is our book, Sexual Enlightenment, How to Create Lasting Fulfillment in Life, Love, and Intimacy, available in paperback and Kindle and also Audible or audiobook. And that's a great introduction to learning more about Tantra, about sexual enlightenment. It doesn't replace the experience. It's great to prepare myself, but transformation doesn't happen through understanding. It happens through experience. And so this is why you may want to consider to come to a workshop or just jump on a call with us and learn more about it and see if this may be a further path for you to open up to yourself and in relationship to your beloved, or if you're looking to find the or bring in the beloved, any of the above. We work with singles, we work with couples, I work with women only, Freddie works with men only. So there's a variety of a menu here so that different people can be spoken to in their particular concern at particular times in their lives. Mm. Oh, also, there's another thing in the show notes, if that is a possibility. We'd love to share a gift, which is a 1 hour workshop video, introductory workshop video, which is called Ignite Your Relationship. And that's available as well.
Okay, magnificent. I'm so grateful that you've brought your presence, your experience, your open hearts, and your sexually enlightened conversation. I'm so grateful. Thank you both.
Thank you so much for having us in your platform and your life. Thank you.
Yeah, you're pretty cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend and please leave a rating and a review. And if you're ready to deepen your relationship and create a truly intimate, delicious, and vibrant marriage, head over to the Work With Me page at alexandrastockwell.com and choose the program that's right for you.